I'm always quite stunned. The number of people that I encounter, once they discover what I do for a living, which I try to keep secret most of the time, that people have this need to confess. And one of the things that people confess, interestingly enough, is I don't believe in God. Does that happen to plumbers? You know, the people find out, you're a plumber, so you're a plumber. I don't believe in toilet flushing. But it happens that people confess that I don't believe in God, and I always respond the same way. Tell me about the God that you don't believe in, because there's a very good chance that I don't believe in that God either. She said she wanted to see me and it would only take 20 minutes, which is pastor code for 2 hours. So we set up an appointment. Now she, intelligent, incredibly successful, a wonderful reputation in her field, one of the most well-read persons I've ever met, devotes most of her life to giving to others, has this laugh that you know those people that have this laugh that just fills a room. Well, when it came time for the appointment, she arrived promptly. She sat down and she pulled a handkerchief out of her purse. And she said that the malignancy that she had fought so courageously to defeat had returned, and that things didn't look so good. So she said to me, I have two questions, and I want answers. Why? Why is this happening to me? What did I do wrong? This isn't fair. And she looked me straight in the eyes and said, I want answers. That's why we pay you, right? You're the one that has the answers. And she began to sob uncontrollably. You know, all I could really offer were words that were woefully inadequate, like, you're right. It's freaking unfair. And then all I could offer were the tears that were rolling down my cheek. You know, today we're going to look at Job, the book of Job. We're going to try to turn the lens and see if we might see something new in the suffering that Job experienced. You know, there's an incredible part of the story where Job was suffering, and it says in chapter 2, it says that his friends came to visit him, and then it literally says that his friends spent 7 days and 7 nights sitting next to Job on the ground. It says in chapter 2, it says, because they saw that his suffering was so great, they didn't say a word to him. I kind of wish the book of Job stopped right there. To me, that would be it. That would be probably the best book in the Bible right there. If the book of Job stopped right there, somebody's suffering, his friends saw the person in suffering, they went to the person in need, and they sat in silence in his need for a whole week without the need to say anything. That's powerful. Sometimes I wish, as a church, maybe that's the one thing we should try to teach and train and encourage and empower and equip, is the capacity to be a presence with people in their suffering without the need to say anything. But after a week, I don't know what happened to the friends, but they opened their mouth and it went all downhill from there. They felt this need to kind of understand the suffering, rationalize the suffering, explain the suffering. So one of the friends said to Job, you know, clearly God is teaching you a lesson, that God must be disciplining you in some way. Well, that's comforting. That makes me feel better. Another friend said, clearly, either you or your children were disobedient to God. Well, I would sit a lot better in my suffering if you told me that. And the last person, the last friend said, well, you know, Job, you just don't believe the right things. You just don't have enough faith. Not very helpful, right? So when I think about the book of Job, one of the things we need to understand is that we need to kind of understand who Job was and how he saw the world and how he saw God. And he was a typical Jewish man of his day. So they believed that if you were faithful, you would be blessed. That you would have health and wealth, that cattle, you'd have a large family. You would be blessed because you're being faithful to God. That's what they believed. And if you were somehow suffering, you were being punished for your disobedience. That your suffering also was your fault somehow. You deserved it somehow. That's the worldview that they lived in. Now that might seem kind of primitive to us, really? Really? I was just yesterday I was watching a basketball game. And at the end of the game, one of the players who was victorious, first thing out of his mouth, I want to thank God. Without God, this victory would not have been possible. Curious what God had to do with the game, and I'm curious what the other team did so badly that they would have to lose. And then it's the wonderful, I was going downtown yesterday and trying to find a park. And I could not find a park. And then out of the blue, right in front of where I wanted to be, a park opened up. So the first words out of my mouth, oh, thank you, God. As if somehow God is there ready to reward me with a parking spot. I call that the parking spot God. You know, we concede even in our language that sometimes we say things like, well, everything happens for a reason, as a way to try to comfort ourselves or others, with this kind of idea that the suffering we are experiencing is somehow caused by God to further some hidden purpose. And we're told, you just got to trust that. You just got to trust everything happens for a reason. Well, how would you trust a God fully, really, who causes your suffering to further some purpose that remains hidden to your eyes? I love Kate Bowler's book. It's titled, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies That I Love. The other thing we're told and we tell others is, well, God wouldn't give you more than you can handle, right? Well, think of the theology of that. Think of the first four words. God wouldn't give you. So what it's really saying is that it's God that is giving you the suffering. It's God that is causing you the adversity. And then we have this God that is going to cause you to suffer to the point where you're at the breaking point. You can't go any further. And God pulls back because I will not give you more than you can handle. What a cruel God. And quite frankly, there are times that life gives us a heck of a lot more than we can handle. There are times that life is actually quite unbearable. And if you are in that spot, it doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong or that your faith is not where it needs to be. It means life is hard. So this whole idea that there is this God out there kind of remains out there and occasionally intervenes to bring about blessings or to cause suffering, it has a word. It's called supernatural theism. And when people say to me, you know, I don't believe in God, more often than not, what I discovered, they're describing some variation of supernatural theism. And they're describing a God that I struggle to believe in as well. So we have in this book of Job, it really focuses on the age-old question. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do innocent people suffer? And does God have anything to do with that? So we have this book of Job, which is part of what's called Hebrew wisdom literature. So it's part of a collection of books that are considered to be part of Hebrew wisdom literature, not Hebrew history, not Hebrew fact, Hebrew literature. So you have this book that's fiction that was never intended to give you the answer, but that was always intended to invite you deeper into the questions, to wrestle with the questions. So here you have the story. You have Job is a good man, a faithful man, leading the good life. He's healthy, he's wealthy, all is good. And what Job doesn't realize is God is having a conversation in heaven with Satan, probably better translated as the adversary. And they're talking about faith. And God points to Job as an example. Now there's a good and faithful man. And Satan says, that's what Satan would say. I bet if you take away all that he has, you will find out what little faith he has and how little he believes. And again, remember, it's fiction. In the fictional story, God says, all right. And Job loses everything. Loses it all. His family, his children, his wealth, all his cattle, his reputation. His wife ends up saying to Job, curse God and die. And he has this skin disease. Now Job's friends show up, as I mentioned, to trying to somehow get him to understand why he's suffering. But do you know what I find most helpful about the book of Job? Is Job then spends over 30 chapters swearing at God. Job actually puts a case to God, accuses God, yells at God, screams at God for over 30 chapters. I find a lot of hope in that. You know, Anne Lamott said, to scream at God means you haven't given up hope in God. Could faith, she said, be the container to hold our anger, our disappointment, our sadness? What if we had a church? What if church, our focus wasn't necessarily on providing trite answers that really end up being unsatisfying anyway, or pious platitudes? What if the church provided a space where you could scream at God? Provided a space where it was okay to express your doubts. Provided a space where it was okay, I'm not sure if I believe in God. Provided a space where you could be angry, where it was okay not to be okay. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who has cancer, and she said her biggest struggle right now is that her family and her friends, trying to be helpful, are encouraging her to be positive, to be brave, to be strong. She said they mean well, but I have this overwhelming sense of guilt because I don't feel like I can meet their expectations. She said, I just long for a space where I don't have to be strong. I long for a space where I can swear at God. I have a friend who attends, it's not in this town, but what she describes as a happy church. She says it's always happy. She said we sing hymns every week about an awesome God. And God is always awesome. And the preacher bounces up onto the stage. And he's always grinning. And every other word is awesome. That's awesome. And she said when you're depressed and contemplating suicide, it's hell to go and be in a happy church. She said, I long for a place where I can confess there are some times I don't think God is so awesome. A healthy spirituality is an honest spirituality. I love the fact that Job's friends tried to offer their pious platitudes and their rationalizations and their explanations of suffering. And Job essentially says, get lost. Get out. I don't want it. I am guessing there are times in the middle of my sermons you've wanted to say that to me. What a gift it is. What a gift it is to have a space where it's just okay to scream at God. Well, Job spends 30 chapters screaming at God, and then finally Job gets a response. One of the things I love about it is Job is persistent. He keeps at it. He assumes that God is going to respond. And then it says, out of a whirlwind, out of a storm. And I think it's actually significant that God doesn't speak out of the sanctuary, out of the temple, out of the beautiful place, out of the quiet place. God speaks out of the whirlwind and storm. And God says, where were you when I commanded the morning? So God doesn't give an answer. God asks a question. I'd be ticked. What kind of response is that? Where were you when you commanded? Essentially what God is saying to Job, I'm God and you're not. You know, for the longest time, I was like, really? Really? And then I realized, really? Wow. Could God be inviting us to stop asking why? To stop asking those questions that really don't have any answers? I remember when Lori was in the ICU, battling for her life, and a dear friend, colleague, said to me, Stephen, you have to stop driving yourself crazy, continuing to ask why. Why is this happening? The fact of the matter, it's just not fair. It just is. I don't have a good reason. It just is. And he said, and it really sucks. But what if you stopped asking why? And instead asked where? What if that was the holy shift? Rather than why, God, how about where, God? Where is hope? Where is compassion? Where is tenderness? Where is life? And then when I shifted from why to where, well, tenderness was in the nurses. Steadfast strength was in the presence of my sons. A fierce love was in each and every one of you. The way you held us and carried us. I think of Mr. Rogers. Remember Mr. Rogers in a time of crisis? Where Mr. Rogers said, you know, when you're afraid, look for the helpers. There are always helpers. Don't focus on what's making you so afraid. Look for the helpers. Look for the love. Look for the compassion. Look for the hope. So Job gets to the end of the book. And it says in chapter 42, Job says, now, I have heard about you, God, with my ears, meaning I've heard all of this lousy theology that has let me down. But now, God, now I see with my eyes. What Job came to realize after all of 30 chapters of screaming was that God was present in the screams. That God was there the whole time. William Sloan Coffin, famous preacher of Riverside Church in New York, preached this unforgettable sermon a week after his son Alex died. So if you can imagine, Reverend Coffin stepped into the pulpit and he said, most of you know that a week ago, my son Alex, who loved to race me in every race and beat me in every game, beat me to the grave. And he said, there are a lot of things that you can say when someone dies, but there's one thing that you should never say. He said, I was in the living room the night after Alex died. And a woman, a neighbor came by, just the kindest woman. She came into the living room and she was holding, I swear to God, 18 quiches. And as she was taking the quiches to the kitchen, she turned and with sadness, trying to be comforting, said, I just don't understand the will of God. And Coffin said, there's a lot of things you can say when someone dies or when people are suffering, but there is one thing you can never say, that it's the will of God. No one knows enough to say that. But he said, my consolation lies. And then he goes on to describe, this is a God, by the way, a God I can believe in. He said, my consolation lies in the truth that when the water and the waves swept over my son's car, it was God's heart that was the first heart to break. You know, Christianity is the only religion that confesses a God who suffers. We may prefer a God who expresses God's power by preventing suffering or explaining suffering. But what we have is a God revealed to us in Jesus. Revealed to us in Jesus on a cross. Who suffers with us, who weeps with us, who is willing to go into the very depths of hell with us. So maybe faith isn't being able to explain the darkness we experience in life, or even prevent the darkness. Maybe faith is knowing that we are never, ever alone in the dark. That we are loved with a love stronger than death itself. A love we are promised from which we can never be separated. So maybe the invitation is to stop asking why. There are never any satisfying answers to that question. How about where? Where is God? And maybe when we're the ones willing to move alongside the person sitting in the darkness, not saying a word, just being the presence of love, that's where God is. May it be so.